up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Edge of Sanity is the game for this week's episode. Edge of Sanity is a 2D survival horror strategy game, and a lot of comparisons I see between this and Darkest Dungeon, which is a game we've discussed many times, as well as Through the Darkest of Times, that sort of World War II strategy game, and games like Darkwood, Void Bastards, and a little bit of maybe Alan Wake, maybe a little bit of Call of Cthulhu. The game was originally released in September of 2024, so pretty recent, on PC, Switch, PS4, and 5, Xbox One, Series X, and S. The game was developed by Vixa Games, which is a small team from Poland, and I'm looking on their website, and they've released some small games, mainly on PC and Switch. Nothing that really stands out to me as being that popular, or at least having heard of any of these. The game was published by Daedalic Entertainment. I think I'm saying that right. Daedalic or Daedalic, maybe. And they're an indie publisher out of Germany. And they published a lot of games that I've seen or we may have talked about on our Tales and Sales episodes, like Inkulinati, the Holy Potato series, the Shadow Tactics series, Deponia series, as well as the Edna and Harvey games. The game launched with a DLC called the Supporter Pack, and that basically comes with the digital soundtrack, a digital art book, as well as some different skins for the dog companion that you can get in the game. The game released at a price point of $19.99, and that DLC, the Supporter Pack, is available for $9.99. Runtime of the game, I've seen a couple playthroughs, like full playthrough videos on YouTube, that are about 6 hours, but that's really if you know what you're doing and you're not wasting time or meandering. You can definitely get up to like 12, maybe even close to 15 if you're being thorough or if you're lingering, which I definitely see some similarities with Darkwood. The game does have a platinum trophy for our PlayStation listeners. Not many people have played this yet. It's very close to launch, and so I don't know if anyone has the platinum trophy yet. Me, I bought this on PlayStation. I've been playing it on my PS5, as well as sometimes on the Portal. And I got this for $17.99. I got it as a pre-order. And it's interesting because this is another one of those games that I wouldn't have really noticed or heard about unless it was on the PlayStation storefront. I saw this in the coming soon or pre-order now line of games. And so I saw this and I'm a big fan of Lovecraft and Cthulhu in general, as well as survival horror and resource management. So this is definitely a game that caught my eye and I've been playing it. I believe there are 3 chapters in the game. I'm pretty far into the second. I've put in close to 8 hours, I would say. So I'm definitely moving along, but I'm being super thorough and I'm lingering a little too much like I've done with games like Darkwood and Darkest Dungeon. But that's really just how I get into these games. And so I've been playing along. All right, let's talk gameplay for Edge of Sanity. So there's a bit of a dichotomy between sometimes being in a 2D kind of side-scrolling action type format, and then other times more strategy and more resource management and planning out what different NPCs are going to do and tending to them. So let's just talk about the general pace of play. And you're going to hear me make this comparison a lot, but I see so much of Darkest Dungeon in this game. Right off the bat, the similarities, you're going to be spending time in a hub that's sort of like your camp, and there you can access your storage, you can craft different things, you can check on NPCs, you can go to different production stations, potentially upgrade them, and then you can look at the map, and that's really where you're strategizing where you're going to go next, so you choose from the available areas that you can go to, and then once you're in there, that's when you're going to be doing the 2D side-scrolling. You're going to be encountering enemies, picking up supplies, items, advancing the story potentially, and then eventually when you're done that level, you'll return back to camp, rinse and repeat. So let's start in on just some of the basics, more the 2D function, what you're literally doing. You're going to be able to move your character left to right. There's going to be a button that you can hold to run, and there's another button you can toggle on and off crouching, where you'll kind of walk slower for the consequence of sound, which we'll talk about eventually. Your ability to run is affected by your stamina meter, and if you run it all the way down, you won't be able to run. And then it'll slowly build back up if you're walking, but if you stand still, it actually jumps up and refreshes rather quickly. You'll see a lot of prompts to interact with things when you're walking back and forth, and it could be to check on things, maybe get some information or some context about something that's right in front of you. It could be to search things, to find items, it could be to press a button or pull a lever, or use a ladder. You'll be climbing up ladders a bunch. And a lot of the times, some of these prompts will come up and you'll have to press and hold them. And you can access your menu, so there's a lot of things on your menu, namely your inventory, a place that you can sort of house your collectibles, read notes that you picked up. On the inventory screen, you can drop items, you can equip things, you can use some of your consumables, but the thing is, when you open up the menu, it doesn't pause the game. You would have to hit, I guess it's options on the PlayStation controller, but that's a different thing than pulling up your menu where your inventory is, because you can pull that menu up, but enemies are still going to move around and it doesn't pause the game. You will have a weapon wheel, so we talked about equipping things, but you'll have sort of an ability to quickly assign them spots on a wheel. Different from pulling up the menu, you can pull up the quick access to change what weapon you currently have equipped, and I believe that does pause the game, or at least slow it down a lot. So if you're in a pinch and you want to switch between the weapons that you have and the wheel, you can do that, and I don't think it will be a big deal. But because you have weapons, there's going to be a button to swing your melee weapon, or if you have a throwable equipped, you would hold that button, and then you would sort of move around this arc that's telling you the trajectory of where you're going to throw it if you let go. You also have a lamp that your character's carrying, and you have the ability to turn that on and off. On PlayStation, I believe it's with the top of the D-pad, but it does have fuel, so if you are low on gas, you might want to use it more sparingly, and if you run all out of the gas, you'll have to refill it by using a consumable on your inventory menu. There is a button that I believe is to dodge. It's a little confusing. It doesn't really get introduced or explained too well. Basically, when you're walking, you're not able to pass by enemies. You can't move through them, and neither can you use this dodge thing to get past them. But what it's for, I believe, is if an enemy is going to attack you or something's thrown at you or you're going to get hit by something, you can press this at the right time and your character kind of does this little animation where they're like skirting to the side. And basically, you can dodge an attack that's coming right at you. And I think the timing for this is actually pretty lenient. So if you're kind of close to close with an enemy and they're swinging at you with a big attack, you can use this and potentially not get hit. So let's talk about being in these 2D levels and how you're progressing, because that's going to be a lot of what you're doing. And these levels that you're going to be in are going to kind of be gated. They're going to be very limited in terms of the area that you cover. It's not going to be like open world or anything like that. And it'll have a certain number of rooms, a certain amount of available area when you're in a level. And there are going to be different locations that are going to dictate, I guess, some of the terrain or some of the things you see in the background or some of the functions. And they're going to be sometimes in a forest, sometimes in a mine, sometimes in sort of like an office building. And when you're in these levels, you're going to be exploring and you're going to be interacting with a lot of things and you're going to be picking up a lot of things. So like I said, You're going to be searching things, maybe picking up items to put in your inventory, interacting with things, maybe pulling levers. You're going to use ladders like we talked about, maybe call elevators and go up to different floors. Sometimes you might walk through, particularly in the mines, and after you get past a certain point, it might cave in behind you, so it's kind of like a one-way. And you'll be collecting a lot of items, and these items can be different weapons that you can use, whether melee weapons or throwables, or they can be consumables, like some things that give you health back or lower your stress, which we'll talk about. And then other things are going to be resources that are really only going to be valuable in your camp. And as you're exploring, you have a certain number of spaces in your inventory, but each of these different items will stack, but they all have different amounts or maxes that you're able to stack them at until they have to take up another space in your inventory. So there's going to be a lot of strategizing on whether you should use certain things or save certain things. Certainly, I would suggest saving a lot of resources and bringing them back to your camp, but you definitely always want to have a weapon or a health pack if you're low on health. And as you're exploring around in these levels, there's going to be some light puzzling. It might be you have to retrieve a certain colored key and then go back to the door that it would open. And you would find that just by exploring, checking in different boxes and crates. Some of these could have lock combinations, like three number combinations. They might be written in the environment. They might be written on notes that you pick up on. Not too many in terms of like riddles, and nothing really stumped me too much. And also, as you're exploring, you might run into NPCs or just characters to talk to. Some of them you may have like a quest in that level to do something, to unlock a door and also help them. But when you come across a lot of these characters, some of them you're able to recruit and get them to come back to your camp. And of course, you'll come across enemies. And you'll see a lot of enemies that are basically just walking back and forth on sort of a patrol route. You can be patient with enemies. You can wait for them to maybe go all the way to the other side of their patrol route and try to get a little closer. When you're standing there, or even when you're moving, you can use the right joystick to move the camera a little bit and see a little further, but not too crazy. Sometimes you might have an enemy on patrol and they're walking past a particular structure. And when you get up to it, it's actually an opportunity to hide inside of it. And then you can wait until they come back the other way on their patrol and then come out and then keep walking. Either way, though, you cannot walk through enemies, nor can you dodge through them. So you have to find a way to get around them. And these hide locations are strategically placed. They're not everywhere, but you need to kind of pick and choose your battles. You do want to worry about alerting enemies. And one of the major things is going to be making noise. So anytime your character is moving or running or crouching, there will be sort of like a circle around them that pulses for how much sound you're making. So obviously when you're running, you're making a lot of sound. When you're doing the crouch walk, you're really soft, so you can get a little bit closer to enemies if their back is to you and they won't notice you are there. You can also choose to engage with enemies with your weapons. Now, we talked about there being melee weapons and throwables, so you can use them in combination, but a lot of your enemies are going to have a varied number of hit points, although it doesn't display it. Basically, I just mean a certain number of hits. Some enemies are only going to take one hit, some will take multiple. I think attacking them when their back is to you does more damage, but I'm not really certain of this. But some of your different weapons will do different amounts of damage. I don't know how it changes for the melee weapons, but the description of some of the throwables are pretty clear. Like you'll find regular rocks and then you'll find big rocks, and it says in the description, this does more damage or something like that. With the arc of your throwables, you want to time them. If an enemy's walking towards you, maybe throw it where they're going to be in a second or two, because the throw is not like immediate. It does have a little bit of a slow carom, I guess. Some things you'll throw will do AoEs. Sometimes there are things in the environment like barrels that are flammable, and if you throw certain throwables, it can blow them up and potentially do a bigger damage attack to an enemy that's walking right through it. And other times you're going to have enemies that are afraid or get hurt by the light. And you can basically use your lamp to kind of shine it on them and they'll run away, but they'll also get hurt if they walk under like an environmental light source, like a lamp or a torch or something like that. There's a lot of variation in terms of enemies and what you can do to either dispose of them or sort of avoid them. And then you have you, your character. So your character will have a couple meters up in the top left corner. We already talked about the stamina meter. That's kind of in the middle. At the top, you'll have your hit points meter. It's a red bar. And then below that, you'll have what's called a stress meter, which basically anytime you're interacting with enemies or you're close to them whether you're engaging with them or hiding, that stress meter is going to go up and that'll have different consequences. Anytime you have a weapon, it's going to have a durability counter. So certain weapons are going to have varied ones, like an axe might have 15, a knife might have 10, and it'll tell you how many durability points are left. And basically, anytime you swing it and hit an enemy, it's going to go down by one. So that's telling you basically how many hits you have left. And a lot of your consumables are going to be to potentially get more health back, to alleviate some stress. And eventually, when you're done in these levels, you're going to want to return to camp. And you're literally going to come across a door that has a prompt that says return to camp. Some levels will have two of them, the one you came in and the one that you're sort of looking for. But either way, you can use that one in the beginning. So just be aware of that. If you come into a level, you're going to start right in front of that door. So if you happen to hit the button prompt for that accidentally, you're going to go back to camp and then you'll waste your day because you didn't really explore and discover anything. Sometimes you might end the level if it's like a story level and there might be a cutscene at a certain location, and it'll automatically like bring up the return to camp menu or the post-level menu. But basically, anytime you return to camp, you'll see like a post-level summary that'll tell you like your current inventory. Like it'll just show you, hey, these are all the things that you have now in your inventory. It'll show your health bar a lot bigger. And if you happen to have filled your stress meter, you'll reach another tier on the stress of your character, and there'll be consequences for that. You'll gain certain perks that are also curses. And this is very similar to Darkest Dungeon. And this menu after a level will also show you if anything in camp has changed, if an NPC has done something or something's happened with them. So all those things will be in detail to you when you go back to camp. So let's talk about camp. So camp is going to be your hub or your safe place. And here there are a lot of different things, a lot of different stations. So there's a place for you to unload your storage. So anything in your inventory that you don't want, you can put in your storage. A lot of your items, like I said, are going to be weapons or consumables. There are crafting materials that are also items. But something else you're going to pick up in the levels are the resources. And these are going to be things like water, food, wood, and scrap metal. When you're in a level, you pick up resources and they take up spaces in your inventory. But once you go back to camp and you put them into your storage, they don't take up slots in the storage space. They actually go to the particular station that that resource is related to, and they're kind of stored separately. So you don't have to worry about like the max storage in terms of picking up resources. But when you're in level, you have to weigh like, oh, do I have room for this? Which thing should I leave behind? And also when you get there, any NPCs that you found and told to come back, they'll be there. The game starts with one of them there. So you'll always have one just at the beginning. And then you're going to see the various stations that are around. So things like a water tank, a food station, a wood cutting station, a scrap metal station. And so basically, if you have any NPCs back at your camp, you can assign them to a particular station. And if it's the first time you're going back to camp or you haven't done a lot of things, you're going to have to build up each of these stations. And that's going to require resources and it's going to require time, which is one day. But you will have to assign an NPC there in order for it to get done. Once you build one of these stations, then you can keep assigning an NPC there every day. And that will allow that station to produce whatever that resource is or however much of it per day. So if you assign somebody to the water tank, per day, it's producing a certain number of water resources that your NPCs and you will need. You can also continue to upgrade these different stations for increased production, potentially having impact on your inventory space or the storage space that's allowed. This is an interesting thing because I am pretty far in the game and I did not realize this. I did, but I didn't because I upgraded newer things, but I didn't realize, oh, I should go back and upgrade my water tank because I'm not producing enough water for all the NPCs I have in camp, and there are consequences for that. So that's a thing that kind of stood out to me that I just kind of had that aha moment, like, why am I not upgrading these stations? I'm not sure if it's because I'm just an idiot or if it's because something about the game was not super transparent or obvious about that, but either way, I'm finally like, okay, I need to be doing this. There's also going to be a crafting bench. We also talked about potentially picking up crafting items. You're able to come over to this location and craft different things, whether it's weapons, whether it's different consumables. And as you upgrade different stations at your camp, you might get new recipes for other things. So there might be different throwables or different weapons that you pick up out in the wild, but you don't know how to craft them. And then eventually you can get that recipe from upgrading some of your stations. There'll also be a station for the map. And this is basically where you look at all the areas that are available and where you might be able to go next. Some of these are going to specifically look different. And the simple ones that are these diamonds are going to be basically just for exploration, gathering resources and going there. Some of them are going to be specific areas that are related to NPC quests. Most of these are optional. And then the ones that are going to kind of advance the story are going to look very different. And when you highlight it on the map, it'll have like some context, like why you should go here. And then eventually, once you unlock a certain number of these, you'll see a quest that's basically the end of the chapter. And before you go into it, before you go into that level, it'll have a prompt saying like, are you sure you want to go? And while you're looking at that map, you can actually assign different NPCs to go to locations and scout them. Because like I said, in general, there are three biome locations, like areas that are the office buildings, areas that are the forest, areas that are the mines, and you can constantly repopulate the map with more of those locations, because after you go to one, it'll disappear off the map. But if you don't have any locations to go to of those three areas, you're going to have to send an NPC to scout those particular locations, and then more areas to go to will pop up the next day. And then finally, you'll have a station that is a tent, and this is a location that you can use to rest and recover, and you'll gain a certain number of hit points and you'll alleviate some of your stress meter. But you can also assign an NPC to sleep here, and that'll be linked to sort of how they work and how to alleviate some of their stresses. So let's talk about NPCs. Like I said, you're going to find these throughout as you go to different areas and explore. I don't know how intentional the placement of these are. I think it can be random because depending on which locations you scout, they kind of come up with these random areas to go to. I don't know how frequently you can come across these. I also don't know the total number of NPCs that are available to pull into your camp. I will tell you that there is a max of 5 that you can have at the camp, but I've definitely seen pictures or screenshots of other people's play where they have characters that I don't know who they are or I've never seen them. Each of your NPCs is going to have a morale number. You want that to be high. And you'll also see how much required food and drink they need per day. Now, if you have those resources, whether in your inventory or at your camp, they will auto-fill in for each day, so you don't have to worry about that. But remember, we said that NPCs can be assigned to man particular stations. Some of them will actually have specializations. Like, it'll say this character is a water production master or something like that. And if you put them on that station, they'll produce one more water each day or something like that. So NPCs can sometimes undergo different conditions. They can be tired, sick, they can be hurt. It might lower their ability to produce. It might make it so that they can't work for a certain number of days. They might need something in order to alleviate that condition. They might need to rest in the tent. They might actually need an item that you can find. But if anything goes wrong, if there's not enough resources to give certain people and they don't have their food or don't have their drink, their morale can slowly lower. I don't know too much of the algorithm. I feel like it's simple. Sometimes I think there's a chance that like their morale won't go down despite maybe not giving them resources. You, of course, then have the ability to boost morale in your tent. If you let them sleep, that can potentially boost up their morale 1, or there are certain items like we talked about, whether you're alleviating conditions or you can find coffee. And if you give it to an NPC, it will boost their morale by 1 as well. Sometimes when you're back at camp, there might be a prompt to talk to those NPCs that could potentially be linked to a quest that might be coming up for them. Or if you did a quest, then they might have something to say. But these are definitely linked to trophies because I did get a couple trophies for doing particular quests, but they are optional. You can choose not to talk to some of these NPCs. And there is a day cycle. Anytime that your character rests or anytime that you go to a level from the map screen and jump into it, everything will advance 1 day. And so that's where all the things are going to move forward. So if someone is at a particular station assigned, then they will produce however many of that resource they're going to produce. If you plan to build something or upgrade a station, then it's going to take that day. And when you get back to the camp, that thing is going to be built. Same thing with resource consumption. Your NPCs, if they need a certain amount of water and it's assigned to them, after that day, then they will have consumed that, and then we have to move to the next day. And NPCs can die or potentially betray. These are all things that are determined by how high their morale is. So the lower their morale gets, things could happen. You could have specific events that happen when you return to camp and you see a prompt for that and an explanation of what happened and potentially a choice for you to decide their fate or how to deal with it. But I believe once their morale goes down to zero, they will die. It hasn't happened to me, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works. And in terms of pacing and accessibility, in general, this game, like I said, it's played in chapters. I believe there are three. I'm pretty far into the second, but I don't think there's much game left. And a lot of what you're doing is advancing these quests or things that you have to do. And in the top right corner, most of the time, there will be objectives, although it's not overtly labeled that, but it'll say, like, you need to find this, or you need to build the truck, or you need to repair this. So those will be available to you, so that's giving you a vague sense of what you need to do. But a lot of what you're going to do in the interim is find NPCs, build and upgrade stations, find items, sort of that rinse and repeat to keep survival going, keep things at a high level of production, and keep people happy so that you are able to still do things. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to keep your nose to the grindstone. You can meander, and you can focus on just upkeeping or sustaining, keeping your resources high, keeping people happy. This is definitely me with these games. This is how I play the game Darkwood that I talked about a while back. Sometimes I feel like I linger in certain chapters or in certain areas longer than I need to, but you will eventually want to advance into later chapters. I think some of the newer stations or newer things that you can build and upgrade are potentially gated into the chapters after the first one or after the second one. I'm not sure what resets when you go into a new chapter. There is the potential that you can lose a lot of your items or resources. That's where I feel like the consequence for maybe lingering in a chapter too long can rear its head. Potentially you could have wasted your time. I don't know if you upgrade certain stations that they stay upgraded in the next chapter, but again, I've been lagging with upgrading a lot of my stations. I kind of forgot that I could do that. But just be aware that lingering too long in a chapter, it may not eventually be worth it, even if it's just about getting you comfortable. And in terms of difficulty, I believe there are two options, normal and like a hard mode. And I think the only difference is that in normal mode, you can manually save whenever you're in camp, but both of them will auto-save at the beginning of a day. But I think in hard mode, that's the only time that it saves. So if you want to reload, you have to go to the beginning of the previous day, when I guess in normal mode, you can do your manual saves. So anytime you come back to camp and potentially go back out, you could have saved and will be able to reload that. I think maybe the enemy damage might be different, but I'm not sure. And then there's dying. So this is an interesting mechanic. So when you die or lose all your health, it kind of fast forwards to the next day and brings you back to camp as if the day just progressed. But what happens is you have no items that you gained in that level, but anything that you used in that level, you have lost. So it's weirdly a lose-lose situation. And in all honesty, you're better off just reloading your last save. There's a bunch of times that I died, and I died for stupid reasons. Like, I didn't go to the ladder and press use. And if it was at the edge of the cliff or something like that, I just walked off the cliff. And if you fall from a high height, you automatically die. But I found that it's better to just reload, even if you have to replay like a whole area. But again, I'm playing on normal, and I feel like the challenge is fair. So if you're someone that feels up for the challenge of hard, again, I don't know what other special challenges are in there, but I think just playing in the normal game, I think, is a pretty fair challenge.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk vibe for Edge of Sanity. So it should be fairly obvious, but this is Lovecraft Eldritch Horror, and it's written all over its face. So let's talk about the visuals in this game. This game, not just from its gameplay, but from its visuals, is so Darkest Dungeon. It takes so much from it. You've got these kind of cartoonish looking 2D characters that have these really thick black outlines around everything. Thick outlines, thick shading. You can never really see the character's eyes. There's always like the shade or the illusion that the eyes are behind the shade or in the shade, really kind of promoting darkness. Your characters do kind of like a slight fidgeting when they're standing there, especially your character when you move them, like there's some fidgeting. It's just very Darkest Dungeon. And colors, very dark and drab. You'll see a lot of grays, shades of blue, shades of green, shades of brown, sometimes some spikes and maybe yellow, but really toned down and really drab. And you have your environments. Like I said, there are three general areas that you can go to: forest levels, mine levels, or the office building levels. And so you're going to see a lot of appropriate features, especially in the immediate background, like when you're in the forest, trees and their branches, when you're in the office, like the different doors, the buttons, the elevators, just very defined. And then in the mines, you'll have rocks and boulders, and then the wood scaffolding that holds them up. And then sometimes in the foreground, like even in front of you, there'll be like structures there that are just all blacked out, but it really makes it feel like there is darkness. So there are things in front of you and between you and the camera. And again, the use of darkness. So you have this lamp, you can use it to illuminate. Sometimes you'll have environmental lighting, whether it's torches or office lights, but this can potentially cause stress. I believe the game tells you this. I haven't literally seen the meter tick up when you're in darkness, but I think it does very slowly. When you come across an interaction, there are icons that will be there sort of before you walk up to it, and there'll be these kind of small diamonds indicating like, hey, there's something here, or you will interact with something. And then you'll start to see some commonalities in the objects that are interactable, like different chests that you're going to see constantly, to the point where when you see the box, even from afar, you're like, okay, I'm going to be able to open and search that. And visually, the game has a lot of jump scares and flashes of things, alternate environments or like demented versions of the room that you're in flashing in and out, and potentially transporting you to that demented version. And this is where you're going to see a lot of that Eldritch horror, like physical, a lot of tentacles with all kinds of bubbling on them, or eyeballs are a big thing, small and large. You're going to see a lot of blood smeared, slimy goo smeared on the floor, on the walls. It can get very gory, and potentially like the bodies that are left behind, and you'll see bones and skeletons, and even when you kill enemies, they might explode or pus might come out or blood, all kinds of crazy gory things. And your monsters that you're going to see, some of them are going to be like bugs crawling on the floor. Some of them are going to be humans that are like slowly turning into Eldritch horrors. So they might even look like other people like you, but they don't have an arm. It's now a tentacle and their jaws dropped. And then you'll see ones that have further transitioned, or big ugly guys that are further transitioned. In terms of audio, I really like and appreciate the sound effects in this game and the different cues. So obviously, if there's a lot of blood or gooey things, you'll hear squishiness. You'll hear when an enemy is close or walking towards you, or potentially behind a door that's right next to you. And the audio is really great about jumping in with these boom sounds. Like if something happens, if an enemy sees you, you'll kind of get that sound notification. But also the use of silence and different creaks, and whether it's like the mechanics of things moving, an elevator in an office building or in a mine, like the wood creaking of the elevator. Sometimes that silence can be a little chilling if you're just going into a cave or into a mine and it's kind of eerily silent. The music in this game, I do like the music. It's very atmospheric. It's very moody. Sometimes it's this spooky kind of slow simmer of tension, almost like you're in a horror movie, like very simple sounds, whether it's strings or whether it's those different instruments they use with water to make some of these sounds. There is voice acting in this game. I gotta be honest, I don't know if this is necessary. I feel like it didn't add to the feel. Like I've got the visuals, I've got maybe some tentacles, or I've got the audio of the music or the jump scares. It's not that I didn't like the voice acting, although I think maybe it was a little over the top. But I really felt like them reading the lines was just so cumbersome, and I didn't really need to hear any of their voices to get a sense of their character. I think it would have sufficed if at the beginning of their line they just made a noise or they said one word or something like that. I didn't really need these slow, deliberate deliveries of these lines vocally, because I was invested more visually, and I thought that maybe the sound effects and the music kind of took care of the audio. And in terms of themes and setting, obviously a lot of Lovecraft and Eldritch, it presents it right out to you. The idea of your sanity being tested, that's kind of in the title. Playing along with things that happen in the plot. Are you delusional? Is your mind playing tricks on you? What is real? What is not? The stress meter and the different perks that you get and what they do if you're low on health, if you're high on stress, if you're near an enemy, if you're fighting an enemy. The story, I think, is kind of going towards this you versus your mind and the question of whether you can trust certain things, whether yourself or whether the NPCs. I found it sometimes to be a little bit too transparent. Like, I would see our character experiencing something, and then we would get a scene of like something going on behind the scenes or with certain people. I understand why sometimes that might be good, but I just didn't feel like the fact that I knew something and my character wasn't aware of it, I was like, come on, like, I'm seeing this, like, you're not seeing this. And sometimes your answers are a little slow and it's like, I'm ahead of you. I kind of like to be on the same page as my character. Other things in terms of the setting, so the idea of being in a snowy environment or on a mountain, I think you're in Alaska. So there's a lot of classic horror things that do that. Things like Dreamcatcher come to mind, as well as a game from the Wii called Cursed Mountain, which I think has a lot of similar vibes. It's like you're alone up on a mountain and it's kind of you versus yourself or you versus your mind. Also some pulls from Resident Evil. You've got a corporation here. You don't know what's going on. They're doing tests. Potentially there's a cover-up, and then other sort of supernatural things like a native tribe or civilization. A lot of it is tropey, maybe things you've seen before, but I don't think it's overly egregious or overstays the welcome there. All in all, I feel like everything involved with the themes in the setting, it's all interesting. I like all of it, but I don't feel like it really goes into that much depth. I think it's just presented kind of overtly at you. Maybe a lot of red herrings, tropes, and I'm not saying that I need it to be in depth or I need to care about this character, but I think a lot of these things are just kind of being told or shown instead of it being built up and feeling like, as the person who's experiencing this, like I'm learning something or I'm really getting to the bottom or like I'm really interested to see where this goes. I was kind of just happy to be around all of this, but not super invested, I feel. Let's wrap up the conversation about Edge of Sanity. So I like this game. It scratches a lot of itches for me. So survival horror games, I'm a big fan of. Strategy, taking my time. Resource management, I am huge about, especially in regards to survival horror. I've talked about games like Darkwood, where I would just linger in a game once I got the hang of being in a certain situation and managing my resources. I like sort of that feedback loop. And then, of course, add in the Lovecraft, the Eldritch Horror. You know, on paper, love that. Love that idea. And again, happy it's here. I really feel like it leans into the Lovecraft and Eldritch type of stuff visually. Like, you've got a lot of the tentacles, your character has visions, the mental stress, that psychological horror, all of that coming in without necessarily the deep investment in the story and the character. Again, there's stuff there, the story progresses, but it's not something that I feel super invested in. Overall, so much inspiration from Darkest Dungeon. I can feel it, I can see it, and Darkest Dungeon, a game that I loved. Playing it can be stressful for you. I feel like decision-making, it takes a toll a little bit on me, but I just like exploring those levels and managing my resources. That's really my bread and butter. I'm an idiot because I didn't realize I could upgrade my stations consistently, so I think for a lot of the time, for at least maybe 2 or 3 hours, I made this game a lot harder for myself than it should have been, but luckily I didn't have any of my NPCs die. Take from my experience, hopefully that warns you to partake more in upgrading things, or you could wind up struggling with the morale like I did. And again, I did that at normal, so if you're even aware of the upgrades, you might not be getting the resources, and so that fair challenge is still possible. In terms of value, I think $20 for an MSRP is fine. I feel like it would sit better at $15 at the MSRP. I got it on sale for, I guess, $18. I'm satisfied with that because I love so much of the presentation. I think if this were ever on sale under $15, I think that would be a great price for anybody to get in on. This is a solid resource management game, psychological horror. Again, love that idea, love that it's there. And you can play it at your pace, get lost in it, linger a bit too long. Not crazy about the depth of the lore and the purpose in the story, but really just glad that it's there. And I think that can make this enjoyable for anyone. So regardless, this is a solid game, and I'm really glad I played it and glad I supported it. And I highly suggest that you do the same. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.